I'm Molly Kimball. Welcome to Fueled, a wellness and nutrition podcast. I'm a registered dietitian and nutrition journalist with a passion to help people live their strongest, healthiest life possible. In my weekly TV segments and columns, there's a limited amount of time and space to cover everything, but there's so much more to share. This podcast is my opportunity to dive deeper into the topics you want to know about. So if you feel like you're addicted to carbs and sugar, you just might be onto something. And if you feel like you just can't get a handle on stress eating, no matter how hard you try, you're going to be thrilled to know that there's not only hope, but there's very specific factors that are contributing to why we crave, why we stress eat, and quite frankly, why we self-sabotage. So I've been seeing clients for about 20 years as a registered dietitian, and I've worked through lots of different issues with a lot of different clients, ranging the full spectrum. And one of the things that we look at a lot is why we do what we do. Once we get beyond, okay, here's what to eat, as far as the times, types of food, how much and when, there's a lot of why do we do what we're doing and why do we self-sabotage. One of the things I'll hear often when people first start coming in and meeting with me is, and especially if they're maybe a little bit defensive, they're not super excited that they're there, or there's some level of resistance, you know, the sentence that I'll hear a lot is, I know what I should do, but my problem is whenever I'm stressed, I stress eat. And so that does nothing. That does nothing to solve any problems. It's basically just sweeping it under the rug, and it's kind of just giving it this catch-all name, but without really digging into what does that even mean. And so that's what we'll do today, is look at, for us, for individually, it may not even be stress that's causing us to overeat. It might be other things that are causing it. But why do we do it? What times of day are we doing it? What are our trigger points? And then what can we really do to try to stop this from happening and recognize that when it starts to happen? And so I think the first thing is to start with that word stress. You know, people use the phrase stress eating a lot. Stress really has no single definition. It has a different meaning really for all of us. And I found that, you know, what one person considers incredibly stressful, another person may thrive on. And that's sometimes hard for us to wrap our head around it. But what we consider kind of our safety zone, other people, that would really be anxiety provoking for them. And on the flip side, we all react to stress very differently. And we all know that person who kind of flips out and has that very high stress reaction to what we consider a very low stressful situation, and then vice versa. And I've had a lot of clients over the years who have had, I admire, because they really are always empathetic and compassionate and reaching out to others in spite of an insane amount of tragedy or sadness that they may have had in their life. And so when I look at those clients and how do they kind of get themselves above this and still reach out and care and have that compassion to others, in spite of all this tragedy and loss, compared to a person who is having very high stress reactions about stuff that we consider not a big deal at all. And I've asked them, and how do they do it? And what's kind of the secret behind that? And the common thread and common answer from all of them is, it's all relative. And to try to be understanding and try to realize that while we may consider that crisis of the day to be really trivial, in that person's world, it's a really big deal. So I bring that up because a lot of the reasons that we do self-sabotage when it comes to food or alcohol or anything else has a lot to do with what we're allowing to chisel away at us throughout the day. And so the more that we can try to do to buffer our reactions to those that maybe we find annoying or irritating, or, you know, we feel like a little bit dismissive of, the more that we can try to neutralize that and not let it chisel away at us or irritate us, it's going to help us in the long run. So realizing that stress, different definition for everybody. We all have different definitions for it. We all have different stress responses. And when we look at stress, though, it's incredibly important for us from a whole body perspective to buffer our responses to it. So it's impossible to change the stressful things that are going to happen in our lives. These things are going to happen, whether it's with work, with family, with sickness, with friends. There's always going to be things that are going to be incredibly stressful situations. We can't change that. We get that. But we can change the response that we have in a lot of these situations. And especially when we're talking these ongoing daily stressors, we've got to find a way to manage them really as effectively as possible. So when we look at the long-term effect that stress has on our body, we know we're highly aware that it affects our mood, it can affect our sleep, it can affect our food cravings, but we might not be as aware that it can increase our risk of heart disease, it can increase our risk of cancer, blood pressure. There's a lot of things that it is these long-term negative effects of stress that are really toxic to us. So the more that we can do to dial into what's causing this, and why we're having these reactions we are, the better. So think back to science class, that fight or flight response that we all learn about. And basically, you know, we have that stressful situation, that stressful event happens. And it could be something at work, it could be a negative conversation with our boss, it could be something that happened in traffic even. And that fight or flight response is, you know, we feel that surge of adrenaline. And what's happening is our blood pressure goes up, our heart rate goes up, our breathing rate goes up. And our bodies are preparing us for that fight or flight response. And so our vessels are constricting and they're shuttling oxygen and carbon dioxide to our muscles to work. They're shuttling free fatty acids in there to tell our bodies to fight or flee. But in the real world, we're not. You know, we're sitting there at our computer, at our keyboard. We are sitting in a meeting. We're driving our cars. We're sitting there, you know, on our sofas, and we don't have that fight or flight, but our body has prepared ourselves for it. And so what happens is there's no fight or flight. We're just sitting and simmering in it. But because our bodies have prepared us for that, we now have that high blood pressure. We have those free fatty acids shuttled into our bloodstream, which translates to high triglycerides, high blood fats, high blood sugar levels. So we can see that very easily with these heightened levels of stress, why this is so toxic for our bodies, increasing our blood pressure, our cholesterol, our risk for diabetes, and inflammation, risk for cancer. So it's key that we do what we can to buffer it. Not to mention, in the immediate day-to-day, we're going to be much more pleasant people. So when you think about, okay, there's a stressful situation, how are you reacting to it? And how are you reacting to it right there in the minute? But then what happens to you that day, the next day, throughout that week? Most of us are going to have some response to stress, whether it's hard for us to sleep, or we skip exercise because we are sleep deprived, or our schedules kind of got off track with whatever project we had going on that was causing us the stress. If we drink, we tend to drink more. If we smoke, we tend to smoke more. If food is our drug of choice, we're going to overeat in reactions to stress. So when we look at, okay, let's kind of wrap our heads around what's causing us stress, what's our response to it, and realizing that there's these very toxic effects of it, we've got to do a better job of managing it. So when we look at the things to moderate and manage that stress, a lot of them, quite frankly, when I look at the, you know, kind of the lineup of here's our tools to manage stress, some of these are stressful because they take time, they take focus, and they take discipline to do. So for starters, if you think about managing stress, moderating our workload is always going to be top of the list, because that workload is often what leaves us feeling overwhelmed. And when it comes to moderating our workload, you might be listening to this and be like, yeah, there's no way. Like, more things keep getting piled onto my plate. There's no way I can tell my boss, yeah, never mind. Like, no, thank you. I'm not going to do that. Most of us don't have the luxury for that. And I totally get it. But think about that workload, what's on your plate that is not put on there by somebody else. It's not put on there by your boss. You're putting it onto your own plate. And a lot of times in this, you know, strive for, you know, perfection, we're putting all these things on our to-do list that really aren't essential. And when we put that on top of our true responsibilities for work, for home, for family, for friends, these true obligations, it does feel overwhelming. So take a look at the things that are on your list and see what's negotiable. What are the have to do's, and what are the, it's all right if I don't do it, you know? And so what's taking up these hours and time in your day? And so what can you let go, and what do you not have to do to that extent? And this is, you know, may or may not be something you can relate to, but if I'm giving nutrition talks and presentations and all over, sometimes doing hair and makeup, guys might understand if you're listening to this, but the girls, you know, that can just be an extra layer of time. Depending on the group I'm talking to, it might be a no makeup and ponytail and get there and give that quality content. So, you know, that just shaved 30, 45 minutes off of my time, you know, an hour at the, on a bad day. And that's a lot of time in a day when we're looking at how do I squeeze everything in. But if I put that pressure that my hair has to be perfect, makeup has to be perfect, clothes have to be perfect, you know, lighten up a little bit on some of these things. And then what else are we putting on our plate that is adding to that workload? The next thing when we look at stress is going to be sleep. And this is probably the one that stresses me the most. But 7 hours is kind of the defining time frame. And that's getting 7+ hours is going to be huge for helping us with stress management. It's also going to be huge. There's so much research about sleep and its effect on weight and mood and cravings. If we control everything with diet, exercise, we create a calorie deficit to help us drop body fat. It's actually harder under the same equal conditions. This group of people has done this much exercise and controlled diet compared to the second group of people. The people who are sleep deprived lose less weight, less body fat under the same conditions of diet and exercise. So it's a big thing to say, yes, it helps us with stress. It also helps us with weight management, with body fat, all of that. The next thing I like to look at, so think about monitoring our workload, trying to get that sleep in there at least 7+ hours. And I know that's a challenge. But the other thing is, what are you surrounding your space with? And so do you carve out some of that time? You know, it doesn't have to be meditation in the sense that we often think of meditation, but when you're by yourself, what is filling your space? And so if you're in the car, do you have talk radio on when you've been just in a bunch of meetings and you've kind of got overload going through your brain? When you get home, do you turn on the TV and you've got the news in the background with, you know, negative story of the minute over and over and over on repeat? Is silence better, or is music that you really love better? What's going to be better to fill that space around you than maybe what we're putting around ourselves? And so it doesn't, again, have to be meditation in that truest sense, but looking at, even if we just have that window of 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, a commute in the car, what are we doing with that little bit of downtime that's helping to protect ourselves? And then finally, before we get into the nutrition part of it all, laughter, surrounding yourself with positive people. This is one of those things that we know it and we can see it usually in other people, but it's sometimes hard to see that we're doing it ourselves. But when you look at surrounding yourself with positive people, it sounds like the simplest thing on the planet, but we don't do it. So think about who you're choosing to spend your time with. And a lot of times, you know, we may have people that we feel obligated to spend time with. We've known them for years or whatever it is, but they really can suck the life out of us. And they're, whether they're negative or they're critical of us, they're condescending or whatever it is, when we spend time with them, we feel worse after that time that we're with them. And if it's a family member, if it's your mom, your sister, or someone like that, you probably don't have maybe, you know, the luxury of saying you don't want to spend time. They are your family and you should. But if it's somebody that you have been carving out time with and not spending time with other people who really lift you up, and people who, when you get together with them, maybe you were tired, but you still got together with them anyway, and man, you were like so much more energized after spending that time with them, that's the people we really want to surround ourselves with even more. So let's be clear. I'm not saying not to be a good friend. We absolutely, that is not what I'm saying, but how much are we spending time with people who lift us up versus people who we feel a little bit drained, we feel a little bit less fantastic after we spend that time with them. So one of the things you can do is dilute it, do it, you know, with groups of people, and that might kind of help. But then just really taking a close look at that very valuable, very minimal, special downtime that we have, how are we choosing to spend it? So think of these things and those things that we covered first: workload, sleep, what we're surrounding ourselves with in our space, that laughter, surrounding ourselves with positive people. These are not things related to exercise or food or nutrition, but these are the very things that over and over and over are the things that I find with my clients. Not taken care of lead to self-sabotage, lead to that stress eating. So we want to make sure that we've got that core there. So then when we look at, okay, well, what can we do with exercise, with nutrition? With exercise, I would aim for at least 20 minutes, 30 minutes of physical activity a day. And people may have limitations. They're not able to do that much yet. Start small, build up. Now, from a muscle building or calorie burning or cardiovascular perspective, I typically recommend more. We want to do strength training, you know, multiple days a week, 3+ days a week. We want to do cardio exercise. It's going to be higher heart rate, calorie burning, you know, 4+ days a week for at least 45 minutes, or higher intervals for a little bit less time. That's not what I'm talking about here. When it comes to stress and it comes to keeping that positive mindset, that physical movement is going to be key. So if it's 5 minutes, if it's 10 minutes, if it's 20 minutes, it can be a brisk walk and talk. So meeting a friend in a park instead of meeting them for a cocktail. A lot of times we'll do walking meetings. So instead of having the meeting at the table or desk, we're going to have it at, you know, at the park, or even just walking around the facility or walking around the perimeter of where you work, or depending on what type of place or size of place. But getting moving is going to be key. So think of it like this, the phrase that I use, and it's not exactly this, but the phrase that I use is that it's helping to, like, all those stress hormones that are released during that fight or flight response. This is basically helping our body use them up. It helps to kind of burn out those stress hormones. So instead of that sit and simmer when we have that flight or flight response, we are doing what we can to help bring those levels back down to a normal level. That regular exercise is going to help our immune system. It's going to help us feel calmer. It's going to help boost our mood. So those are all going to be key of why we've got to get moving. So even if you feel like, I don't have time to get to the gym, you don't have to. It can just be something in your neighborhood, you know, with your spouse, your partner, your friend. Going for that walk in the morning is great, but I especially like it in the evening after you've had that stress of the day's events happen, because that's when many of us can really benefit from dialing it back. So if you've got kids, you're bringing them to gymnastics practice, soccer practice, whatever it is, and you're just sitting there, get moving. Find a way that you can also at that place or near that place, that if you've got after school activities you're doing with the kids, try to find a way that you can incorporate your own movement into that time as well. So whatever we're doing, trying to get moving, and any time of the day is fantastic, but I really like it in the after work or kind of toward the end of our day, when we can start to kind of process what's happened. Those things that we're feeling stress or anxiety or overwhelmed about, we can either think them through or talk them through. But, and again, it doesn't have to be super intense and it doesn't have to be super long, but let's make it a point to at least daily, whether it's 5, 10, 20, 30 minutes or more, getting moving. So switching gears to food, nutrition, and then really diving into why we stress eat. So this is the biggest thing, and I'll use the word stress eat, even though I don't really like it, but that's what a lot of people call it. I know that that's kind of that we easily can relate to. Yeah, I know that I stress eat. So when we think about why we stress eat, think about what those comfort foods are that you're reaching for. So some people say, you know, oh, like I crave salty, I crave sweet. Some people are like, little salty, little sweet, back and forth, sweet then salty, sweet then salty. You know who you are. And so whatever you're craving when you're looking for, you're stress eating, what are those things you're reaching for? Typically, the answers that I'll get are cookie dough. That's often one of the first ones that comes out. We get cookie dough, we get chocolate, we get ice cream. But then on the flip side, I'll get French fries, pizza, pasta, and so chips. Those things, while some are sweet, some are salty, they're actually very similar as far as how they're affecting our brains, how they're affecting our bodies, and how we're perceiving them. So what they all have in common, that common thread of all of those, whether it's ice cream, cookie dough, chocolate, French fries, chips, they're all high in carbs, but they're not just high in carbs. They're also high in salt and fat. And why that's so key is that when we do have that trio of carbs, salt, and fat, it actually lights up receptors in our brain similar to the receptors, and in some cases very close to the same type that we would have a reaction to addictive drugs like cocaine. And so they're causing that in some people sense of euphoria. In some people, it might be a sense of calmness. It might feel like it's helping to alleviate for that very split second anxiety or depression. But these things, that carb, salt, fat, that trio is gigantic as far as the addictive nature that it can have. And so if you feel like you've been out of control with food and you're reaching for foods that you feel like you just can't stop with, it's usually going to be some trio of carbs with salt and fat. Rarely does someone tell me they can't stop eating grilled chicken or they can't stop eating, you know, sauteed spinach. It just doesn't happen, you know, and it's you every once in a while it's protein-based foods, but almost always it's those carbs. So number one, those carbs, those comfort foods that we reach for are carbs with salt and fat. Number two, when we're eating, just that act of eating is a distraction. So that hand to mouth of the chips in the bag, the spoon into the pint of ice cream, whatever it is, the action of eating serves as a distraction from whatever else is swirling through our minds. So we get home, we're checking the mail, we open the bag of chips. Next thing we know, half that bag or all that bag is gone. We've looked through the mail. We haven't really even thought through things. We're really just numbing out with this food. So when we think about number one, it's the types of foods we choose that are lighting up these receptors in our brains that are causing these pleasure centers to be activated and causing a euphoria, a calmness, a lesser anxiety for just that split second. Number two, it's distracting us. So it's taking our minds off of what is swirling through our brains. So I think that's really key to keep those things in mind, because a lot of times I'll have people, we're really hard on ourselves, and people will tell me, you know, think too about the time of day. I call it the witching hours. Think about the time of day that these cravings are hitting, or that time that you feel like the willpower is just completely out the window. So for most people, it is not 7 a.m., 8 a.m., 9 a.m. We wake up, we feel like we've got the willpower of steel, the resolve of steel, and we feel like we're good to go. We've got our mindset for the day. We've got our game plan for the day. But then come 7, 8, 9 p.m., we feel like failures. We feel like, why couldn't I keep it together? Why was I so easily pulled off track? Well, when we think about things through the day and we think about, we have a limited amount of willpower and resolve. And for each of us, it's different. And some of us have a lot of it. Some of us have a little bit. But when we allow things through our day to chisel away at that very limited resource and finite resource, by the end of the day, we're bottomed out, we're depleted, we're feeling like we're looking for something for that pick-me-up, we're looking for that carb, sugar, fat, carb, salt, fat activation in these receptors, and we're looking for something to just numb out, quite frankly. What can we do to distract ourselves? And so thinking it through that way, the next time that you are raiding the pantry, you're staring into the fridge, some people call themselves closet eaters, others call themselves car eaters because they're actually stopping, picking it up. And in that transition time between work and home is often one of those big witching hours for people. Some people, it's earlier in the afternoon. It might be that 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, when their day is kind of starting to wind down and they're tired. They're starting to look for that pick-me-up, and that's when the snacks in the office kitchen, the vending machine can be really tempting. Or when we're in that transition time on the way home, it's easy to pull your car into a drugstore. I had one client, she's a lady, she's probably in her late 70s, and she had seen me at the drugstore, and she said, "Oh, I think I saw you at, you know, Walgreens or wherever it was." She said, "But I didn't say anything to you." She said, "I was too embarrassed because I was in the candy aisle looking for love in all the wrong places." And so I thought that was hilarious, but it's so true of people that, you know, the places that are just those easy stops, convenience stores, drugstores, you know, to do that quick stop on the way home. And then whoever's home doesn't see it. They're not giving you the stink eye about it. They're not saying that you're eating whatever it is that you had kind of made this promise to yourself, or maybe even them, that you weren't. And so that transition time between work and home can be the time. right when we get in the door, what are we doing as we're kind of unwinding and transitioning for the day? And then the other time is at night. So after the world starts to, you know, the world has gone to bed, kids, family, whatever, maybe they've gone to bed, and we are looking for that distraction, all the stuff from the day is now swirling through our brains. And if it hasn't happened earlier in the day, that nighttime is absolutely the witching hour for so many people. So thinking about your day and when is it, and it might be multiple times and it might vary. Some days it's different times a day. On the weekends, it can be a little bit more frequent if we've got more downtime and we're home. But kind of starting to think about through your day, looking at it as like a pattern, and when are you more prone to that? And what are the things that are precipitating it? What's leading up to that? Do you let things at work really get under your skin? Are you letting different comments get under your skin? Are you letting yourself feel overwhelmed? Kind of all those things that we talked about earlier about what workload are you putting on your own plate? What kind of level of sleep are you getting? What are these, you know, who are you surrounding yourself with in your downtime? Are they lifting you up or are they not? So while those things may not seem to be so integrally tied to food, they are. So I think it's a huge thing to understand that the why we stress eat is the distraction, the numbing out, and then what's actually in these foods that our bodies are having such a crazy heightened response to. So once we understand that and we understand the why, it's a whole lot easier to not beat ourselves up so much and to not feel like we've been just these giant failures. And so understanding the why is going to be key. So then we look, okay, well, what do I do? And that's where we look at, let's look at the foundation of buffering ourselves throughout the day, making sure that we're trying to manage our responses to stress as effectively as possible. When it comes to food, there's a few key things. So first, looking at what we drink, even before we look at what we eat. Alcohol has a huge impact on our body's ability to deal with stress, and it's not a good impact. So we may turn to alcohol to help unwind, to help buffer that stress. But when we consume alcohol day in, day out, it's actually doing the opposite. It's actually increasing our stress response for situations that actually aren't as stressful. So basically, we're having a 10 reaction to a 5 situation. And so if that's something that you've been reaching for that alcohol to help unwind, try going, you know, a few days, a week, 2 weeks, 10 days, see how are you feeling as far as stress goes, overeating, anxiety, without that alcohol in your system on a regular basis. The other is going to be caffeine. So caffeine's fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with caffeine, you know, to a degree throughout the day. But most major medical organizations, health organizations recommend about 300 milligrams or less a day. That's the equivalent of about 3 cups of coffee. So a couple of things there. If you're having that too late in the day, then you might be kind of revving yourself up at a time when your body is really looking to unwind. So, you know, you might consider dialing back the caffeine after lunchtime or so. But the other thing is, if you're having more than 3 a day, caffeinated beverages a day, we're probably doing other things that are leaving you feeling run down that we need to address. Because if we're having more than 3 caffeinated beverages a day and we feel like we need it, something else is going on. And then finally, still on the topic of fluids that we're taking in, we need to be sure that we're hydrated. So one of the first signs of even mild, low-level dehydration is fatigue, being tired. And so if you're feeling that 3-4 o'clock energy slump, a lot of times it's because we're dehydrated, yet we're looking for sugars or carbs or other types of comfort type foods as that pick me up, when really we just need more fluid. So how much do we need? Take your body weight, divide it by 2, and that's how many ounces you need. So if you're 150 pounds, that's 75 ounces. It doesn't have to be just water. Anything without alcohol counts towards your fluid intake. So that's really key. Anything without alcohol counts towards your fluid intake for the day. So if it's tea, it could be caffeinated tea or herbal tea. If it's coffee, it could be decaf or caffeinated coffee. Again, like we said, you don't want to be revving yourself up on caffeine all through the day, but those caffeinated beverages do count towards your fluid intake. And then things that are liquids, so smoothies, yogurts, soups, all those things count towards that fluid intake for the day. But making sure you're hydrated is going to be key for keeping that energy up. So when we're looking at nutrition, what to do, keeping alcohol in check, keeping caffeine in check, making sure you're hydrated. And then when it comes to food, first and foremost is going to be eliminate as much as possible the sugars and the white carbs, because that sets you up on the roller coaster, sets you up for that craving. If we have that, especially with breakfast, mid-morning or lunchtime, it's going to rev us up, put us on that high. We're going to be crashing down 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. We want more. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, more. After dinner, we want more. So no matter what kind of habit you've trained yourself and you're used to having that sugar in the morning, we've got to get it out of there. And that sugar might be in the form of a healthy cereal. It might be in an oatmeal and what you're putting in it. It might be a smoothie that's actually got a lot of sugar in it. So take that close look at breakfast, your snacks. What's the sugar in here? Do they have added sugars? Do they have white flours in there? And get rid of them so that we're not setting yourself up on that cycle. So turn over the nutrition bars, look at the labels, look at what you're drinking, and see what's the sugar in here. As even those things marketed to you like they're healthy. What I would recommend is as close to zero added sugar as possible, and really under 5 grams of sugar total, if possible, unless it's something like a natural sugar from a plain Greek yogurt or fresh fruit. Making sure that every time that we eat, we have that source of protein and fat. So at breakfast, for example, if you've been having oatmeal and toast, dial it back. One or the other, but not both carbs, and then throw some protein with it. So when we think about protein foods, that would be eggs, cheese, egg whites, cottage cheese, plain Greek yogurt. It could be nuts, nut butter. There's a whole host of things. And, you know, people do protein drinks or bars if they're on the go, and all of that's fine. But make sure we have that protein, ideally some plant-based fats with it. And then above all, dialing back the sugars, dialing back the carbs so that you're not setting yourself up on that roller coaster of cravings and energy for the day. And then finally, there's a couple of supplements that people always are looking for supplements. Here's what I'd say about supplements though. If you're going to take a supplement, I had somebody, like, it was a teenager, and he used the example of like a car, you know, that basically taking supplements when you have like a really poor diet is like putting like nice rims on a really junky car. And I get it. So think of it that way. So if you're going to even take the time, spend the money to add supplements, only do it when you're doing that the core fundamentals of balancing diet, balancing all these other things that deal with stress, that deal with cravings, that deal with self-sabotage. Because staying with what you're doing with diet and what you're surrounding yourself and filling your day with, if you keep everything else the same and all you add in is the supplements, you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money. So when we're looking at supplements, there's two very mild mood boosting supplements that really don't have a lot of side effects or interactions with other supplements or medications. One is theanine. It's also referred to as L-theanine. It's an amino acid. It's actually one that's found in green tea. And taken 200 milligrams a day can help with tranquility, help reduce anxiety. It can also help with lowering blood pressure, which is a good thing, but be aware that it could potentially interact with other medications, although slightly and not super common, but always check with your physician first before you're adding any supplements. The other is passion flower. So passion flower is an herb that can help to reduce symptoms of anxiety. And in some people, they may respond to it as effectively as a medication. Personally, I haven't had a lot of my clients find that strong of a response to it, but I do want to share it because it's a pretty neutral, pretty mild herb. So typical dose would be a 90 milligram tablet daily. There's also a lot of different types of teas that have passion flower in there. So with any of these though, of course, check with physician, check with dietitian first. And then finally, there's a supplement called SAMe. It's S-A-M little E. Looks like the word Sam with a little E. And this is actually a compound that occurs naturally throughout our bodies. This is something that a lot of my clients find really effective in dealing with stress, dealing with anxiety, and just generally improving mood and improving symptoms of depression. So SAMe, S-A-M, little E, supplementing with 400 milligrams to 1600 milligrams daily has been shown to significantly improve symptoms of depression. And several studies have found that it's as effective as prescription antidepressants. You absolutely do not want to take SAMe in combination with any type of prescription antidepressant. Absolutely not. So if you are on any of those and you're interested in experimenting with SAMI, talk with your physician, talk with your pharmacist, and don't make any changes until you have their guidance. So these are things that, again, the L-theanine, the passion flower, milder effect, the SAMI, I have had a lot of clients who really find benefit for it. Another interesting benefit of SAMI, kind of a side bonus, is that it can also help reduce symptoms of osteoarthritis. So things that you're taking anti-inflammatory drugs for, SAMI can also be helpful for that. It doesn't happen overnight, though. It can take a month or more before you experience that relief of inflammation. And again, file it under one of those every little bit helps. You're still probably, if you're taking medications for that, you may still need them, but this is at least going to help. And it can also help with mood, any depression, anxiety, and stress. So again, always, always, always check with your physician. Ask your pharmacist about drug interactions, medication interactions, supplement interactions, and then you also can check with a registered dietitian and they can help you with all this. So I hope you found this information useful, and I hope that there's things that you've thought about either, you know, a real big one for a lot of people is stop being so hard on ourselves, stop beating ourselves up so much. And, you know, what we've been looking at as a lack of willpower or a lack of resolve, there's real reason behind that. There's reason behind what we're doing and why we self-sabotage or why we stress eat, but that doesn't mean it has to continue. So thinking through these things that we talked about today, what can you start implementing into your lifestyle? How can you start changing those patterns so that the same thing, that same cycle doesn't continue? So if you've liked what you've heard, we are here every week for our Fueled Wellness and Nutrition podcast. And I'm Molly Kimball, and you've been listening to Fueled Wellness and Nutrition. And you can follow me, Molly Kimball, RD, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you haven't yet, you can go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And join us next week for another dose of Fueled Wellness and Nutrition. Thanks for listening, and stay focused on living your strongest, healthiest life possible.